Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, April 22nd, 2018. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. Not unlike the decision I made to kind of eat like an asshole yesterday. I tried DoorDash for the first time, where you place an order on your phone and people deliver your food to you. I did that with Shake Shack, and it took longer. Like, I could have did that shit myself and it would have, and the food would have been hotter. It was okay, but it was just like, that's being a little too lazy. Cause the guy, it was $7 of, it was over with the tip I gave him. That was like $7 more than I would have paid for the food, but it is, you are paying for convenience. So I get that. And I think they gave me like a discount or something, but I should have probably just went myself. But I was just really tired, and I wanted some Shake Shack. And then one of my friends called me, and he was like, "Hey, let's go out and watch the Miami Heat game." And because I'm trying to be less of a recluse, trying to be less of a J.D. Salinger with not as much talent as J.D. Salinger, but to be less of, he's the person I think of when I think of recluses. I said, yes, I'll go, I'll hang out with you. And we ended up going to a bar, and I had like chicken, like boneless chicken wings, like little small ones or whatever. So yeah, I didn't like the fact that I did that. And, I regret that. I should have made a better decision of, what I probably should have did was just kind of, if I waited probably another half hour or another hour, and I knew that it's just bad timing. His text didn't come in until maybe like a half an hour after I placed that DoorDash order, and I probably would have just been all right. But anyway, so it goes. In the words of the great Kurt Vonnegut, so it goes. All right. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter @mundanefestival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter @ChrisLamberth. This is episode 278. I do not have a guest. It's just me. I'm flying solo, like the great Tony Thompson did when he left High Five, RIP, great unsung R&B singer. I remember when I was in, that's kind of how I learned, like when I was, I don't know that I was ever an aspiring R&B singer, but I will say that I'm a, what do you call it? A failed R&B singer at heart. I used to do it. I did a couple talent shows, but I just really liked singing R&B music, and High Five was great. You know, they had some great tunes. And then Tony Thompson went solo, and then that's how I learned My Sharia Moore was through his version. Sung that a few times at karaoke. Also his song, the High Five record, Never Should Have Let You Go. I remember singing that in college. And like at karaoke, we were doing karaoke, like in one of the activity rooms or some shit. And they had that song. And I remember singing it, and around the second verse, it cut out. And the music cut out and everything. And I just remember that I kept on going. I kept on singing because I knew the song. I obsessively listened to that record. The soundtrack for it was on the soundtrack for Sister Act 2, and I memorized the song to heart, and I just kept singing it. It was amazing. Yeah, so solo episode. There's stuff coming. Like, I've got stuff with guests. I just don't want to blow my load and say, like, yo, this guy's coming. I don't want to be like that podcast dad that says, oh, yeah, you know, like, you're estranged with him. Like, he, you know, you never know if you can take him seriously or not, whether he, when he says he's going to do something. So I don't want to be that dude that's like, oh, yeah, I've got all these people coming up, some friends, like, all this cool shit. And like the podcast dad that says he's going to take you to King's Dominion on Saturday and you get excited. I say King's Dominion because this dad, podcast dad, is from the Maryland, D.C. area. And he's from the DMV. And he's like, yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to have it. And you're waiting on your porch. Your mom is kind of like, you know, I don't know. Your podcast mom's like, I don't know if I believe that this guy's going to pick you up and take you. And, you know, you have your little backpack and your little brown bag lunch. And you're, you know, excited to go. And I never show up. And I never deliver on my promise. This, that's kind of a, that's kind of a sad metaphor. Let's just move on. So there's stuff that I've got in the works and people that I'm excited to talk to, a couple of return guests. And when it happens, I will let you know and you can listen to it and hopefully enjoy it. So I got some stuff that I want to talk about, and got a movie review, got a music recommendation, and I'll talk about some things. But before that, let's get into an email. We got an email. I got an email from Meg from Philly. I'm not going to say her last name, but I will read this, her email, and we'll talk about it. Okay, so here we go. Hi, I found your podcast by way of Aisha Harris and the excellent Oscars recap episode you guys did on Represent. I just started listening to Mundane Festival and started with the most recent episode about the Paul Mitchell tea tree shampoo, which I totally have to try now, but that's not what I wanted to write about. I wanted to give you some feedback because it was jarring to me that you referenced the Me Too movement, but then moments later referred really casually to how you tried to date the cute Puerto Rican haircutter who introduced you to the tea tree shampoo. As a woman who has worked almost exclusively in service industries, I just wanted to share with you my perspective. Since I started working at age 14 until now in my mid-30s, I have fielded uninvited comments and come-ons from men while on the job at an average rate of about once every 2 weeks. It was multiple times a day when I was in my teens, usually from 40-year-olds, and has tailed off to about once a month as I've gotten older, which is frankly one of the only things that's great about getting older. It's super awkward to have someone hit on you while you're at your job for multiple reasons. But the main reason is that all customer service industries, except maybe answering the phones for local gas and electric companies, your job is to be polite and friendly to the customers. To this day, I have never been able to find a good way to honestly tell a customer that their words or actions are making me feel uncomfortable while still maintaining what I consider to be an appropriate standard of professionalism. There's just no way to do it. So I end up laughing uncomfortably and trying to find a way to redirect the conversation and then avoiding them as much as possible whenever I see them again. It sucks. It makes me miserable and frustrated and confused. I never try to get the numbers of people while they're at work, no matter how attractive I find them, because I stop and consider the fact that they're there to do their job, to pay their bills, and hopefully to find some level of personal fulfillment because they like the work they do, not to get dates. I would love it if you would address this in a future episode, not only because it's clear to me that many people think it's fine, but also that many are really bothered by it. No doubt with parties of both genders on each side. I am genuinely curious to get some insight into the thoughts and feelings of someone on the other side of this dynamic who feels that it's natural and appropriate to ask someone out while they're at work. Have you ever had someone react angrily or unhappily? Do you think I'm making a big deal over nothing? I really want to know. In friendship, Meg from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Well, Meg, making a big deal over me asking a woman out at from Supercuts. In my situation, yes, you are making a big deal out of it. I didn't really go into depth with that. At first, I didn't compare I didn't compare I did reference the Me Too movement, but it's not like the Bibby experience isn't on the same level as the Me Too movement. I did mention that, but I casually mentioned that situation with the woman at Supercuts because I got her number. I tried to date her, but it just didn't work out. And I'm not a person that's like, oh, I'm at the bar, I'm going to ask the bartender out, or I'm at a restaurant, the waitress is hot, I'm going to ask her out. Normally I don't. There was just a vibe that I had with that particular woman, just to really go into depth with this situation from the Supercuts beautiful Puerto Rican lady. That was like 10 years ago, and it was like, I think it was maybe 2000. I was already doing stand-up, so it had to be like 09. And I was a lot hotter back then. I was a little more svelte back then. And it's funny, so right before I started, before I pressed record on this episode, I was watching the Seth Rogen Netflix special for, I think it was for Alzheimer's, and they had a bunch of comics on, like Michael Che, Sarah Silverman, Tiffany Haddish, and comedian Michelle Wolf, did a set. Michelle, I started stand up with her. Basically, we started around the same time. Very funny lady. She's got a show coming out on Netflix, and she was talking about, like sexual harassment, the Me Too movement. And she was saying the best way for, like, you know, guys are always saying, and I'm paraphrasing, but watch the set, watch Michelle Wolf's set. It's really good. She's saying like, the guy's like, oh, well, what are we going to do? We can't even tell a woman she looks pretty. And she was like, yeah, you can tell a woman that she looks pretty as long as you're hot. And basically that's the premise of the bit that she talked about. And it's like, as long, if you're hot and you're good looking, you can, a lot of times you can get away with stuff. And I'm not saying I got away with anything with this woman from Supercuts, but I don't know. I think because guys, we don't know. I was talking to a friend about this. We don't know if you like us until we quote unquote shoot that shot. But in this particular situation, it was just a vibe that I felt. And I wouldn't say that I'm a ladies' man by any means. But the times that I've been successful with dating with women have been when I took chances. And I think if I didn't say anything to her and she turned me down, I think if I didn't say anything to this particular woman, I would have regretted it. I would have kicked myself like, oh, man, she was cute. She was kind of, you know, you sent something, but you didn't act on it. And if she turned me down, it would have been OK. But I did get her number. We talked on the, I think we texted a few times. We might have talked on the phone. We talked on the phone a few times, and it just never worked out. And then I think now she's engaged. I think she's probably married by now, and I don't think she's even on Facebook anymore. But I think the way that I messed up with this particular woman was the fact that I asked her to go to Applebee's. And I did, like, because I was trying to keep it casual with this one, with this lady, and she worked in the strip mall that had an Applebee's in it. And I was trying to keep it casual to be like, yo, after you get off work, maybe we could just meet up at Applebee's. I'll buy you some lunch or buy you some dinner or whatever, because it's like really close by. And it doesn't have to have any pressure put on it. And I think, like, and this was around the time also, I'll tell you this. I was, speaking of being an R&B singer, I was working with this rapper, and I was singing, I sung a couple hooks for this rapper guy out of the Bronx. And I was in the studio, and we were working on the songs, and we were texting, me and the Supercuts lady, we're texting back and forth. And this was like around the time where I started stand up, and I just really got into it. And then she just kind of was being flaky, And I just moved on. And we were still Facebook friends. And like, I would send her like some stand up clips. She's like, oh, that's funny. But I just became like super obsessive with stand up. And that just fizzled out. And then I saw one day looking that she had got engaged or whatever. So I'm sure she's living her best life. But I felt like maybe that comment from last week's episode might have triggered you and made you think about your life. And I think when it comes to, like I've said on previous episodes of the show, when it comes to the Me Too movement, I've talked about this on the show and with friends, with male friends, about how it makes you think about relationships and how you've acted, how you've behaved with women. And you might not like some of the things you've said to them or some of the things you've done with them. And it just causes everybody to kind of be on high alert. But I think maybe you were triggered in this regard, and that fucking sucks if you're working and you're in the service industry and you get hit on, you get unwanted compliments and things like that. That's not right. I'm not the type of guy that goes and says, you know, just it's just all like, you know, off the handle with remarks to waitresses, because yeah, they're there trying to earn a living. Yeah, because like last weekend I was in Poughkeepsie, and I went to go to this place called the Double O Grill, which if you find yourself in Poughkeepsie, New York, and you're in that area like near Wappingers Falls, the Double O Grill is this diner that it's a diner. It's like an elevated diner that's kind of like the Cheesecake Factory, but it's just only one of them. I don't think it's a chain at all, but it's a really great restaurant. And my butt, shout out to the homie Paul Verzi, he put me onto it because we did a show. That's where he grew up. But anyway, I was there getting some food, and my server was beautiful, like this beautiful Asian woman, gorgeous. I just clocked her as being beautiful, and I was just nice to her and courteous to her, gave her a nice tip, and I moved on with my life. Did I wonder how our babies would look? Yeah, I did, but I didn't say that to her. So yeah, it's like, I think just in certain situations, I don't know. I think I don't know that it's always clear cut and dry, because it's not, there's some gray area. And I've been hit on before while I was at work, and not that much, but it's happened to me in the past. I remember I was working at Best Buy when I was in grad school. I was in much better shape. When I look back on, I think I've said this on the show before, where, you know, I've always been a big guy, but there were times where I thought I was fatter than I was. And that kind of messed up the perception of who I thought I was. Anyway, I should go to therapy. But I got hit on by a gay dude. Like we were talking. I was working in the DVD section. We were talking about movies and stuff. And he was like, oh, you know, most people do the casting couch to get roles. And I said, well, it's just not my thing to get, you know. It was just a weird moment that the guy was, I guess, trying to see where I was at on the sexual Kinsey scale. But I'm not going to lie to you, I was slightly flattered, and even though I was freaked out. I don't know. I think this is a problem. It's a problem for people who are like that. I don't think that my situation with the Supercuts girl falls into this category of what happened to you in your past. And while I was reading this email, like, I was thinking, when I first read it, I was thinking about that Music Soul Child song that Eric Roberson wrote, like previous cats, where he's just like, I'm not to blame for the pain that was caused by previous cats. But it's definitely a problem. And I just think you're making a big deal over my situation. And a lot of times on the show, you're new to the show. And I think a lot of times I talk about, over the course of the 5 years I've been doing the show, I talk about failed dating mishaps and relationship stuff. I think it's a really good episode for those of you that haven't heard it. Episode 258 with Chrissy Mayer, comedian Chrissy Mayer. We talked about a lot of Me Too stuff. This was around the time where the Aziz stuff happened. And we just talked about a lot of dating things. And there's just been times in my past where I opened up more than I thought that I would when it came to dating and stuff. I think if I look back on my dating history and just even women that I've asked out, there's been more regret about not making moves than I have more of those than I do of like, oh, I should have been turned down more, but not being like a lecherous fucking asshole, but I should have just like said, hey, I should have made more moves and then have been turned down and would have stopped when I was turned down. So let's make that perfectly clear. But normally it's not a habit of, I don't have the habit of hitting on women in the service industry. I just internalize their beauty and I move on with my life. I just say like, she's really hot and she's very beautiful. You know, she's dope. And then I just move on. But just sometimes there's an undeniable chemistry, whether that chemistry carries over into a relationship or sex or whatever. Sometimes it's undeniable and sometimes you should act on it. And you just have to pick those. You have to pick your spots. And I think just giving you an explanation on that, that particular moment in time in my life. So Meg, I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you writing in, and I hope that you, come back and listen to the show. If not, I understand. And, either way, try that shampoo. It's pretty fucking great. All right, let's move on. This week was pretty cool. I got to do some shows at Bananas Comedy Club in Jersey, like down the street from me. I got asked to host because somebody dropped out. There was a problem, and they were like, the manager was like, Chris, can you come down? I was like, you know what, Young? I'm not doing anything. I'll do some comedy. I'll host some shows. It was really fun. I emceed for Theo Von, and did two shows on Friday, two on Saturday. The first two shows were solid. They were good. And then the Saturday shows were sold out. And he brings a really cool crowd, like a crowd that for the most part is really fun. Like they're there to have a good time. And the staff at Bananas were talking about how nice his fans were and how pleasant. Theo Von was on, I think he was on Road Rules, and he's been doing comedy for a while. And yeah, he was a cool dude. Probably the best time. I was telling the manager, probably the best time I've had at that club. With the exception of the time, the Make-A-Wish moment where I got to open for Bill Burr. That was like, for those of you that listen to the show, that was like, have been listening for a while. That was like 5 years ago. Long story short, he was there doing a benefit, and Verzi was opening and doing some time, and another guy. It was only supposed to be a three-hander, and I was there, and just like, I bought a ticket, and Verzi told me to come back to the green room, and we were hanging out, talking, and they were about to start the show, and Bill said, okay, yeah, let all these guys do 10 minutes, and I'll do an hour. And I was like, wow, he means me. And then I did like 10 minutes and it was fucking awesome. And we went to White Castle after. I think there might be a picture of that on Instagram. I'm not 100% sure, but that picture is somewhere. But yeah, it was fucking awesome. And I've since worked with Bill like on a couple benefits, and he's the GOAT. He's one of my faves. That was cool. Yeah, so Bananas was fun. And otherwise, the highlight of the week would have been that I got my Lando Calrissian action figure from the new Solo movie. Now, that poster just came out. I think like some UK theatrical poster just came out. And you can see the dude playing Han Solo in the background, but then like in the foreground is Donald Glover as Lando, and people are like, yeah, this is going to be like a Lando movie. Him in this movie's got me really hyped to see it. Like, I'm excited. Like, getting this action figure, like, I'm hyped for this shit because I want to see what Donald Glover does in this. And I think that's what most people in my bubble, in my echo chamber are excited about Donald Glover in this movie. And it seems like the internet is too. Yeah. And then Rogue One was fun. Rogue One was a lot of Rogue One. I call that, I'll go to my grave saying that movie's glory in outer space, but it was a well done movie. It was really good. And, I know there was drama with this, and who was I talking to? Was I talking about this on the podcast, or I don't even remember, but they did a good job with it. Maybe I was talking to Leah Bonema about it, but either way, I'm super excited about this movie, and yeah, I'm more hyped about it than I thought I would be. And it's funny, I think one of my coworkers, he follows me on Instagram, and I'll just post, like, I've said in the past that I'm really excited about these, like, I like black action figures, and so I collect, like, the Black Panther. It started with Finn. It started with Finn being in Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and I was like, oh, man. So I just kind of, here and there, I'll get these black action figures, and I'll post the picture of them on Instagram and whatnot. And so one of my coworkers, you know, he saw that, and he came to me randomly one day, and he was like, hey man, do you collect these Funko Pop figurines or whatever? I was like, no, not really. He's like, oh man, I thought you did, because you know you post your action figures and stuff on Instagram. I said, well, you know, I mainly just get the black ones. And he was like, oh man, he's like, that's racist, Chris. He's like, I think he's Puerto Rican. But anyway, like, he was telling me that he really likes to collect them, and he was talking about it. And he said that his daughter really, like, you know, likes Barbies and stuff. His daughter's maybe like 2 or 3 years old. And I was like, oh, cool. And I said, yeah, you know, I get them. I really don't open them. And then he was saying how his mother-in-law bought his daughter like this really like beautiful limited edition Barbie or something. And then his wife was like, no, don't open it. Don't open it. And he said that, like, he was telling me her parents wouldn't let her open the Barbie when she was a kid. And it was like the conversation just got to this really sad place where he was talking about how his wife didn't get to really play with the toys. Like, she would get them, but then she couldn't open them. That's fucking sad. And I was like, dude, don't do that to your daughter. If she wants to open it, like, let her open the toy and play with them. Get two of them. If you want to do that, get two and leave one of them boxed up and let her play with the other one. Like, Jesus Christ. And he agreed. And I think he did say, hey, let her open the fucking Barbie doll. Jesus Christ. Give these kids a childhood, man. But I thought that was that conversation just took a weird turn, and I was like, oh, you know, cool. You think you're going to relate to a coworker about like something neat that you do outside of work, you know, like a little hobby. But it got really dark. But yeah, I mainly just get these black action figures. I've got like a few of the Black Panther things. I've got Lando. I'm looking at them right now. I need to do something with them. I found a First Order, a thin First Order in disguise figure. And it was $10. It was $10 at Target. Because I don't think anybody really buys these black action figures. They buy the Black Panther. Every time I was in Walmart last night, and they'll, like, Walmart is just wiped out. They don't have shit. And if you really, if you're really into collecting this stuff, I think the best thing to do is online. And you get them online. Don't let them price gouge you. You know, you pay like maybe 20, 25 bucks at the most for some of them that are really popular, but don't let them, don't let them jerk you on these. I got to get Greg Stone back on the show if he ever answers my text and messages. It's not like I incessantly message him and harass him, but I did put on Facebook one time. I said, I'll know that I'm at a certain level of fame or I'm successful in the showbiz when Greg Stone returns my text about action figures. Because he's like, Greg Stone is like my guy when it come, or he was my guy when it came to action figure collection. And he would tell me, because like, he got me, he put me on to getting my first Black Panther action figure like 2 years ago, the Civil War Black Panther. And that's when I kind of got really excited. And it was Finn, and then it was Black Panther and Civil War that got me super excited and nerdy about this shit. Yeah, so that would have been the highlight. Thank God. Thank God I got to do some comedy this weekend. And that was cool. It was fun. It was fun. One of the shows, two of the shows, I asked the crowd, and they were all white. Most, they were pretty, there's a sprinkle of Black people in there, maybe two or three. I asked them, I started the show off by asking if they had boycotted Starbucks, and and they were like, no, and I just called them all racist and had fun with them. And there was one guy told me after the show, he's like, oh man, you're really funny, I enjoyed you, man, it was great. And they mentioned me talking about Starbucks, and he said, I was sitting right in front of you, and I had Starbucks, and I had a cup of Starbucks coffee. And he was like, he tried to hide it. He tried to hide his Starbucks. That was fucked up what happened to those dudes at that Starbucks in Philly. And we come to find out that's 2 minutes that they were in the store, and they immediately called the cops. And that's in the Rittenhouse area. For comics, that's where Helium is. If you're a comedian and you've performed at Helium, that's like the nice part of Philly, like the downtown area. Yeah, that's like really close to Helium. And that's like the nice part, where I remember staying at a hotel in that area. And it's just fucking weird. I don't know. I don't drink coffee, but I know, like, most people, I know being in Starbucks, like, I've been in a Starbucks waiting to go to an audition or waiting to go somewhere. Normally I buy a water, but if you're in there 2 minutes, you don't, most people try to secure their seats because it's always a shit show in there. And sometimes people don't even buy anything. I remember going into one of these fancy schmancy places, and I bought something. I bought like little granola snacks that cost like $7 or $8 or however much they cost. And you just hang out there and you wait, but you should buy something. Those dudes didn't even get a chance to really do anything. What is up with people waving on Facebook? I don't get that. Just say hi. You know? I think it just seems like it's a little creepy. I actually did a wave thing at a a friend that I'm talking to on Facebook that happens to be a woman, and I was typing something or I was doing something and accidentally waved, and I was like, oh shit, no, and I had to write her. I said, hey, sorry about that wave thing, I don't do that, it was an accident. Please don't judge me. Please don't judge me or think any less of me for that. Like, don't think any less of me for that. Just any of my actions or anything like that, you can think less of me, but not for the fucking wave on Facebook. But I think, whatever. But it's kind of weird. I guess that's taken away from the poke. Is that supposed to be the upgrade from the poke to the wave? Just say hi. We're adults. You know, some of it's people from high school. It's like, we're 38. We're 38 years old. Just say hello, you know? Yeah, so that was fun, and the Starbucks shit was obviously fucked up. It's just like, I feel like being black, we just get, you just get trolled all the time. If it's not, we're not getting killed for people being afraid of us. We're getting arrested for being at a fucking coffee shop for 2 minutes. Taylor Swift covering a classic cookout song. It's just we're constantly being poked and prodded and trolled, and it's hard to sometimes it could be a lot, man. It could be a lot that you just can't fucking be a person. It's fucking annoying. And like the homie Randolph Terrence was talking about this, like on Three Guys On, he was talking about like being in a constant state of having your shoulders up. Like just like being like awaiting an attack of some kind. And even if you're being attacked, you can't even lash out or defend yourself because you'll fucking get killed. Someone put a picture up on Twitter and it got like 100,000s of retweets and favorites about this woman took a picture of this guy, black guy, getting pulled over by a cop. And this guy has his license and registration out. And she's like, yeah, the police officer had his hand on his holster, like ready in case this black guy who's got his license and registration in his hand. It's like, if you're so afraid, man, why are you a cop? Why are you in that line of business? You know, why are you in that career? You know, my mom even said, like, she got pulled over in D.C., going to work. She used to work nights. She used to work, get off at like 12:30 at night. You'd go to work from like 4 to midnight or some odd fucking hours, for the last half of her career. And, she said she got pulled over and the police officer had his hand like on his holster, like ready to, for a person that's like in her 50s at the time, you know? And then when it comes to stopping real crime that you hear about every time you turn on the fucking TV, that shit doesn't happen. And I tell you about getting these email updates from like the patch, like Paramus patch, like all the stuff that's in your area, and they let you know what's going on, and you get these emails about people finding heroin or people getting killed, all this crazy stuff. Harder to find those people than to just get regular people that are trying to go to work. I remember I picked up a coworker from her neighborhood, and I pick her up at 6 a.m. And like a few years back, I was going to get her, and I made my turn. I stopped at the light, and you could turn on red, so I stopped, looked, and turned, and got pulled over in my coworker's driveway. And I was like, I'm trying to pick up my coworker so I can go to work, officer. He was like, oh, just make sure you come to a complete stop on, you know, like I'm trying to fucking go to work, man. Yeah, that shit's, it's annoying. But I don't know if there's ever going to be a real solution about that. I think we just got to be careful. What else? Oh, man. RIP to Harry Anderson from Night Court. He was relatively young, like in his, he was like 65, I think. When somebody dies, a famous person dies, like everybody talks about their connection to him and what that stuff mean to him. I'm going to be no different, but Harry Anderson was important to my career, showbiz career, because when I did the first time I did stand up on television on Gotham, well, with the exception of me doing stand up on closed circuit Staten Island television, I think like cable vision on Staten, whatever. Anyway, when I made my appearance on Gotham Comedy Live, Harry Anderson was the host. And he brought me up. He said my name, talked about my, said, you know, mentioned the podcast, and it was really fucking cool. And that's like when my career got a little bit of a bump. Met my manager that helped me get stuff. And that was really important to my career. And RIP, Harry Anderson. That was, he was nice when I met him, and yeah, it sucks. But he had a good career. So yeah, RIP to that man. RIP to Vern Troyer, man. He passed away yesterday. I didn't know him, but you know, I laughed at his movies. I laughed at Austin Powers and stuff. So another entertainer. Yeah. So yeah, RIP to those guys. Thanks for everybody that watched the Last OG and made nice comments and stuff. I was on, if you didn't know by now, you guys, I had a co-starring guest appearance on The Last OG, Tracy Morgan's new show on TBS. I played a Lyft driver. I had a scene with the great Tiffany Haddish, and it was really fucking cool. I liked the way that it came out. That scene that ended up on the show was improv, because initially, like, you get the script, and I'll tell you the story. I've told this story before when I shot it back in August, but I'll tell it again since it actually came out and I made the cut. So this is around August, and I had initially auditioned for the show like early last year for the part of the guy that used to be on Black-ish and the dude that in the episode who gets punched out by Tiffany's character Shay at the graveyard. And that did, obviously I didn't get that, but I got an email from my manager at like 3 a.m. and he said, "Chris, can you audition for The Last OG?" And I said, "Well, I can come down and I actually called him. It was like 3 a.m. I just happened to wake up and see that email. I said, "Okay, I can come down and get put on tape and then go just be late for work and then do that." So I went down to Manhattan, to Midtown, audition. He put me on tape for two roles, the Greenpeace worker, which that would have been like against type, because the guy that they ended up casting, who you will see in that episode and in the little promo bumpers, he was perfect for that role. And so I auditioned, I read for that, and I read for the Lyft driver, and I got put on tape. And that's actually the day that I had found out that I got that role on Jessica Jones as the male nurse. That was like set in the stone. And so I was already feeling pretty good about that. And I go to work, go about my day. And as I'm like almost home, I get a call from my manager, and he says, "Hey, man, you booked it. They want to put a pin in you. The network's just taking a look at some stuff. They're figuring out some stuff. And then you'll be getting emails and calls or whatever." And I was like, "Awesome. That's great." And so by the time I got home, I got the part, and they were shooting the next day. So the next day I was on set, and I had a scene with Tiffany Haddish, and it's on my Instagram. If you go back to last year, there's a picture of a car on a rig, and there's a couple of like production shoot photos and shit that I posted on Instagram. So if you go back to August of 2017, you'll see how they put the Lyft car on a rig, and they drove it around like Park Slope, and we did the scene. And on the set was pretty cool, because we rehearsed the scene in the director's trailer. We set it up how it was going to be, and the director was like going to say, "Hey," he said, "Hey, man, you were really funny. Really liked your audition." And so that was cool. And then Tiffany came in, and let me get the guy. Josh is, let me get Josh's full name. Is it Josh? No, that's the right name. No, that is not it. Let me, looking for it. Last OG cast. Oh boy. You know, I didn't know that I was going to, let's see if I can find it on this thing here. Ryan Gall. I think Josh is a character on the show. Ryan Gall, who plays Tiffany's husband on the show. So the three of us were doing the scene, and we did it basically by the script. And then the director said, okay, I think we got it. But, you know, let's just kind of improv. Let's just have a little fun. Because I was supposed to, like, curse her out. And it got really heated. And it was fun, man. And what ended up was, like, kind of like a little improv moment. And it was really fucking cool. And the coolest thing about it was that my parents saw it. And they, like, kept watching it over and over. And that was really cool. It was really special. Like, you know, in the scheme of things, like, you do have to, I was talking about this with some friends. You do have to celebrate. And Brandon and I think, talked about it a couple weeks ago on the show. You have to celebrate the wins. You know, you don't have to go get out of pocket with it. Like, you don't have to get out of pocket with talking to the opposite sex and hitting on them or talking to them. Yeah. While they're in, okay, you don't have to get out of pocket with the wins, but you do have to note them and celebrate them and add and catalog them through the journey. But the proudest moment, I guess, probably one of the coolest moments in my career was, like, just my parents seeing me on TV, and because they put in so much work for me to even, like, be here, like, it's just like, when you have any type of success in your career, like, you're standing on the shoulders of a lot of people, and there's a lot of people that helped me get stuff. But at the bottom, at the foundation is my mom and dad. And so it was really cool for them, you know, to get that little sliver, that sliver of success, and for them to be really to be proud, and that made me feel like that was the shit. And then, like, some of the family members that kind of, I don't know, the family stuff is, it's kind of weird, because when you take on an endeavor where you're just not, like, you're not going the route of, like, you just get a job, you go to college, you get a job, and you just pay your bills, and you go on vacation, and you live your life, and then you have a family, and then you die. Like, you do take a career, you take a path that's not always as certain, and not you don't take the you take the road less travel when it comes to, like, show business or any career that's not as stable, not where you go to school and you automatically find a job in your field and you make a shit ton of money. Show business is not like that. And for, you know, family members that doubt you and say, oh, he's just going to be washing dishes and shit, it's not going to be what he thinks it is, and hearing all that, is he gay? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but because you're in the arts and stuff, people will tag that on you, and you just go about your business. And it's nice to see, like, it's nice to have those wins. But in the scheme of things, it's a co-starring role on a show. And I hope there's more to come this year. But it's one of those things where I'm at the level of show business where, like, yeah, you get a part and it's exciting for you and you can tell your parents, but it's like, I don't know until, like, 'cause I didn't know fully that what was going to air. I just knew that I was on episode 3. That's what I filmed. And that's what made it. But a lot, like, you know, I always joke about getting cut from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. It's like, I booked it, but you don't know what's going to happen unless you're a guest star, a special guest star. You don't know. I worked on a pilot earlier this year. I worked on one last year that didn't go. So you just never know. And that's why, like, I didn't post anything about this until, like, I literally saw me in the scene. I was like, okay, you can check me out. And I had in episode 3 of The Last OG. And the same thing with Jessica Jones. Like, I was like, oh, that was cool. I hope it makes it. And it made it. And then I got checked immediately when it dropped. No, when I woke up for work, I went to that episode and just said, oh, there's me. All right. You can check me out in this scene and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. It's really nice to do something and get these parts. And I hope that more happen. And when they do, I'll definitely let you know once I know that I've made the cut. And just like with the high maintenance part, like there was more to that scene. I just happened to make it. And I think I jumped the gun a little too early on that. I was like, hey, it's great being on High Maintenance. Check me out in episode one in the premiere. I just made the cut. So there's more stuff to come. And I'll let you know when I know, you'll know. But just know that I'm working, and thanks for everybody with the kind words. It makes me feel good, man. It does. It's really fucking cool to do that stuff and to say that you doing shit that you always wanted to do when you were a little kid. So it's fucking cool, and I'll just say my advice to everybody is just to celebrate those wins when you have it, and whatever your field is, man, like just the it is a marathon, you know. So really cool. That was fun. Okay, so moving on. And then another thing about this showbiz stuff, when you're in a field that a lot of people can't really understand, like they understand, like most people, it's a weird thing, because I tell my parents, like, I don't know, like if you can, yeah, you can maybe tell your friend or a couple people that I was on this thing, but they're not going to have the same reaction as you. They're not going to be as excited as you are. So you can't get mad when they don't, like, so Chris is going to be on this thing. Oh, did you hear about the other person that's more famous than Chris? Like, they'll talk about Kevin Hart. Like, there's coworkers that I know that I do stand up, and they'll just talk about somebody more famous than you. I remember somebody saying something about Tiffany Haddish, and I was just like, yeah, I was thinking to my, it was after I had shot The Last OG. I was like, yeah, actually did some work with Tiffany. So, you know, maybe you'll see it. But yeah, it's a weird thing. So just celebrate those wins with the people that really care about you. And eventually they'll see it. They'll see you shining. But whatever. So it goes. Celebrate those wins. All right. Moving right along. So God of War came out for PlayStation 4. And I know everybody's like really excited about it. One of my buddies, I'm not going to put him on blast, but he's a comic friend of the show, but we're in this text message chain, and he said, oh, God of War is like, God, what did he say? I'm not going to say who he is. Says God of War is the most emotional experience I've ever had while playing a game. And I'm like, wait a minute, dude, you just got this game. It just came out yesterday. And he's texting this on Saturday. I'm like, this can't be better than The Last of Us. And he was like, it might just be, it's already the greatest single player adventure story wise ever. And he put ever in all caps. Already heavier than The Last of Us on some be a man type shit. And I was like, all right, man, come on, dude. I was like, I'm intrigued, and I don't know when I'll get to this game, but I was like, holy shit. Like, he's, and this is, it's Mike Brown. It's comedian Mike Brown. So he was really into this game. I have to talk to him about this shit. But I'm a big stan of The Last of Us. So this is kind of, that was very jarring to me to hear that as I talk about Meg being triggered and hearing the shit that I said on my show. My interest is peaked. It looks fucking great. It looks amazing. I don't think I'll have time to play it, but it looks great. I want to play it, but like you're saying, it's on The Last of Us level, and that means if he's saying it's better than The Last of Us, he's saying it's better than Horizon Zero Dawn. And I'm just I don't know. If The Last of Us is number one, Horizon's got to be like 1A or somewhere adjacent to that. Like, I don't know. I just have to I have to play it. But I do know that at the beginning of the game, you're basically burying your wife. Kratos and his son, they're burying the matriarch of the family, and it's like, Jesus, is that the matriarch? I guess so. Yeah, because I don't know if he's got a grandma. If you're playing Kratos and you're burying your wife, and it looks like it does, and I guess it does have that Last of Us kind of vibe, but I see Neil Druckmann like being cool about it. I want to go to his tweets. I'm going to go to his tweets and see what he says about God of War, because he's really like, let me see here. Because he's really cool about it. He always, like, he bigged up Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, some of the popular games, like, he's bigged up stuff that he likes. He was like, yo, like, this game was really good. Shout out to these people. He was really behind Horizon Zero Dawn, and he was cool about it. And so this is what he says. I guess Corey Barlog. Let me see who this Corey Barlog is. Maybe he's the creator of God of War. I think he had something to do with it. You can look that up. I'm already going off the rails with this, but I just want to see what he said, what Neil Druckmann said. And Neil Druckmann, for those of you that don't know, Neil Druckmann is one of the writers of The Last of Us, one of the main people behind Naughty Dog, who created that game, and had a big hand in Uncharted. So let's see. He says, this is his tweet from a day ago. He says, "Promise Corey Barlog I wouldn't talk about God of War until it was out. I can finally say this game is the real deal. The bar for action/narrative games has been raised. Congrats to the team, Sony Santa Monica." So he's like bigging it up, but he's like, yo, when this Last of Us 2 comes out, that's y'all's ass. So, yeah, young. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be, yo, I'm excited about that. I do want to play God of War. I don't think I'll get to it. I got to finish. I keep saying this, and you guys are getting tired of me saying it, but I have to finish Uncharted, Lost Legacy, and I got to finish that Frozen Wilds that I'm afraid to play for Horizon Zero Dawn expansion. All right, so let's do a movie review. I saw I Feel Pretty, the Amy Schumer movie. What I did Thursday night, I should not have done. I'm too old. I was too old to be doing what I did on Thursday night. I went to go see Traffic, the Paula Patton, Omar Epps movie, because I was going to see it anyway, but I got an email from AMC Rewards, and they were like, oh, if you go see Traffic the opening weekend, you'll get bonus points. You'll get double points. And I was like, bet. So I'll buy a ticket. Even though I have Movie Pass, I'm going to support a black film, and I'll get bonus points and get my Stubbs numbers up, you know? And so I see the movie and I have a good time. It's entertaining. Rod from the Black Guy Who Tips, he and I are going to do we're either going to do a spoiled movie review on his paywall, behind his paywall, or we'll do one on my Patreon. So be on the lookout for that. Cause I think he and I are the only people that were excited to see it. What I will say is if you go see it, maybe see a matinee, but Laz Alonso's role, see it for that. That should be the main, see it for that and nothing. It's worth seeing. It's worth your time for seeing his performance. And I'll go into depth with that when I talk to Rod about it. That's just a sneak preview. So I went to see that and I enjoyed it. The movie let out at like 9:20, 9:30. And as I was walking out, I saw that I Feel Pretty was like 10 o'clock. And I was like, you know what, Young? I'm about to go see I Feel Pretty. Because I know that I'm not going to see it this, probably not going to see it this weekend because I got shows. So I was like, I'm going to see it. And so I bought a ticket for that. Stubbs numbers up, level high. Stubbs rewards high. Because I paid like, the ticket was like $16. Because the AMC Riverside that's near me, the new AMC Dine-In Theater, they don't do movie pass because they want to charge you like full price for those tickets and reclining seats and all that shit. So I went to see it, and let me read you the blurb about it. And I'm not going to say that I shouldn't have did the double feature when I knew I had to get up early for work. Not because the movies, I hated the movie. It's just because I'm old. All right, here we go. All right, here's the blurb. A woman who struggles with feelings of insecurity and inadequacy on a daily basis wakes from a fall, believing she is suddenly the most beautiful and capable woman on the planet. With this newfound confidence, she is empowered to live her life fearlessly and flawlessly. But what will happen when she realizes her appearance never changed? This movie stars Amy Schumer, Michelle Williams, and Rory Scovel. I like this movie. It's a 35% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I don't think that's fair. I know this movie had a lot of controversy around it because it was like about body image, and they were saying Amy Schumer is not really fat, and she, it's some, all this shit that they, you know, want to hurl around. I'm looking at this thing on the New Yorker. I'm on the shows, like the Google page for the movie. And it's saying, Forbes magazine says box office, Amy Schumer's I Feel Pretty defies skeptics with 6.3 million on Friday. I Feel Pretty reviewed on from the New Yorker. I Feel Pretty reviewed, another waste of Amy Schumer. I think A Quiet Place is still number one. Let's see, Box Office Mojo. Let's see who's, okay. I Feel Pretty, Friday estimates number three. So Super Troopers 2, A Quiet Place. Always like, let's see what the weekend. Number 13 to 15. I don't think that's in yet, but on Friday, based on Friday, it was number three. This movie was, I liked it. I thought it was cute. It was a standard issue rom-com to a certain degree. It was not as good as Trainwreck. Her last two movies have not lived up to, even though they had funny parts and I laughed at what's the movie, Snatched and this now I Feel Pretty. There were definitely moments that were super funny that I laughed at. I just feel like, when it comes to, like, because she came out of the gate so hard, and Amy Schumer is a good actress. Now, full disclosure, I met Amy Schumer a couple times before she blew up, and she was nice to me. The first time I met her, it was at Bananas Comedy Club, which where I was at this past weekend, and I was watching her and Mark Norman, comedian, friend of the show. He's been on the show before, and I went down to see Mark. Mark got me into the show, and I hung out. And after the show, I was like, "Oh, my name's Chris." She's like, "Oh, you're a comic? God, I would have put you on." And I was like, "Oh, you know, I was like, that would have been dope, but you know, all right." And maybe a few months later, I went down to see them at the Stress Factory. Mark was opening for her again, and she actually put me on. And that was my first time, I think, performing at the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, New Jersey, which if you don't live in New Jersey, it's one of the best comedy clubs. To me, it's one of my favorite comedy clubs in this area. The places I've performed at in the Northeast region. When that place is packed, it's nothing like it. It's awesome. It's fucking great. And I got to perform there for the first time. I did like 10 minutes and I killed. And after the set, she was like, "Good luck working here." Like, she meant like, yeah, you're going to be a regular here. You're going to get to work here. But it didn't work out that way. But that was to, she didn't have any power to do that, but she did put me on the show. She was super nice. And so that's, I always think fondly of her for that. But I think she's, even before I met her, I thought like she was talented. And especially as an actress, where like she was funny, like even in like little small parts that she had, she was really funny. And it's almost like Judd Apatow. I think Judd Apatow is the DJ premier of movie producers, where if you really lock in with him, like your first joint is going to be dope as fuck. Like The Big Sick with Emily and Kumail, Trainwreck. Like Trainwreck, I think, is part, like if you really go like pound for pound Apatow movies, yes, The 40-Year-Old Virgin is good. Yes, Knocked Up is very good. But it was like that Trainwreck joint, Young, that shit, it went a little deeper and it got dark. Like there was a death in there. And you know, like, I think that, and Amy Schumer wrote that, and that was her story. And anytime, it's almost like when a rapper puts out their first album, like maybe that was her Illmatic of movies, but it was just like, I'm not trying to bring, fuck it, it is what it is. That Trainwreck was really good. I liked it. But then it's like when you start working with people, and you have to work with different people, but I don't know that they captured, and like, I don't know, like that piece, I don't know what that thing is. If they're saying like that was, whoever wrote that thing about Amy Schumer, like they're wasting her from the, what is that, from the New Yorker or whatever. Anyway, let's see. Super. It just says, they just have Friday numbers right now. But anyway, like, it's very, like, it's a good date movie. You can see it. You don't have to rush to the theater to see it, but right now it's a funny movie. I went with these, when I was in the theater, I think they might have been, they had to be college girls, because there's a college right by the theater, and they were giggling the whole time, and they were being worse. They were annoying, and I think I had a couple of, shout out to the Hot Firestarter crew, I had a couple sleeps during that movie, but it wasn't because of the movie, it was just because it was 11:30, and I'm old, and I normally get up at 4:30 in the morning. So, but I got the gist of it. No, it was only a couple. I didn't miss anything super major. I was able to follow the story, but I want Amy Schumer to work with some more people. That's gonna, like, I don't know. Rory Scovel was good in it. Michelle Williams was really good. She was doing like an interesting character thing. And the message of the movie, I think it's important for women. I don't want to put that on. I don't want to be part of the patriarchy putting that on for women. But in a world where women are scrutinized for their body and for their looks and stuff, it's like, you know, like, just fucking believe in yourself. I too have to realize that sometimes you are, everybody has fucking body issues and shit. You know, I wish we were hotter, I think, for the most part, I guess. I don't know. I'm just a comedian, you know, so what do I know? But I will say that it does speak to a lot of these issues that are going on. I think the premise of this movie is genuine. I like Amy Schumer. So if you like Amy Schumer, I know people have problems with her, but if you like her as a performer, I would say go see it, because there are funny moments in it. I was entertained. The movie, it did its job. But when you think about the shit, like Trainwreck is like, it's just not as good as Trainwreck. Even though there's funny moments, but then should I be comparing? I don't know. Fuck. If you want to see it, go see it. But I think it's worth seeing. But I would say if you have not seen A Quiet Place, go see A Quiet Place before. And you can catch this joint at a matinee, and I think you would have a good time if you saw this shit. It's got some good actors in it. Rory Scovel becoming a romantic lead. He's fucking funny. He's great. That's the movie review. And I'll give you a music recommendation. Youth in a Roman Field, a ghost folk band. My buddy Scott Stanglin is in this band, and it's the band leader of this outfit is Claire Whelan, who was on the show a couple of years ago. And this is their first. Is this their first album? I think this is. Let me read you the blurb about Youth in a Roman Field. I'll read you a little bit about it. Youth in a Roman Field wants to help you break the rules. The bastardized string quartet meets folk band meets jazz combo from singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Claire Whelan incorporates the sound of Appalachia, cayenne pepper, and Ghost. The band includes collaborators Tiffany Topol, Scott Stanglin, shout out, Cassidy Sturz, Katrina Link, a friend of the show, starring on Broadway right now in A Band's Visit, and Jamie Mohammedine. Their debut album Of Grit and Grace was released in May of 2012, and the EP Suits for Children was released October 2014. Originally out of Chicago, they are currently making a home in New York City and released their second full-length album with legendary producer Stuart Lerman on April 20th. So this is their second. This is their second full album. I have both of those other ones. Storm Conductor, it's really good. It's like, it's music, like, I'm a big fan of strings, and I really appreciate it. John Bryan, when he worked with Kanye on The College Dropout, like, I could definitely tell, because I'm not a big, I love music, but I can't really speak as an expert, but I love John Bryan, what he did with Fiona Apple's Extraordinary Machine, and I really liked the production on that. And then when I found out Kanye was working with him, and that was the same year, that was 2005, and it was cool. So I really like, it's very melodic. I love sonically, it just sounds fucking great. So a lot of times The Ritual for me, when I'm doing shows, when I'm on my way to a show, driving and whatnot, I'll listen to my hip hop shit. And like this weekend, I was like listening to like Fonte's new album, Sky Zoo, mixing it up, and like a little bit of Evidence, and just like getting ready for the show. And on my way from the show, I was listening to this Storm Conductor album. It's just very mellow. It's good songwriting. It just sounds good. And if you've liked my reviews in the past or music recommendations, just check it out. Give it a go. It's really good. It's very folky. Claire's a great singer. You got some super talented musicians that have worked on Broadway, that are currently on Broadway, that are really amazing artists. And I've seen them live a few times, and some of it's on my Instagram. If you dig around my Instagram, you can find little clips of their live shit. So I highly recommend Storm Conductor by Youth in a Roman Field, Claire Whelan's band. That's the music recommendation, and I think that's gonna be it. I think that's it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. Got some stuff coming for you. I still owe you guys, you Patreon subscribers, I still owe you the failed Office Depot voiceover audition. I have not forgotten. It's coming to you. Thanks for the new subscribers. I appreciate you. Thanks for listening to this, and I'll talk to you next time. Peace.